I was warned by our special guest this week not to refer to him as Peter Wainwright, but I just did it. His name is Peter Wheelwright. Can you explain to me why I shouldn't call you Peter Wainwright?
Well, it's because the Wainwrights made the Waynes. Those are the horse carts. The Wheelwrights made the wheels for the Waynes.
All right, so you guys...
But it's a very common mistake. People often refer to the Wheelwrights as the Wainwrights, and the Wainwrights as the Wheelwrights, so...
We have our audience totally confused, so we might as well keep going. As long as we're messing around with your name, we're speaking to Peter Wheelwright, who is going to be talking to the Mountaintop Golden Agers on April 15th about his new book, The Doorman. And your name, Peter Wheelwright, you actually like to go by Peter Matheson Wheelwright.
Yes, that's right. Peter Matheson was my uncle. I was quite close to him, and in many ways, his writing was very, very influential on my own work. And he was a big supporter. And this new book, The Doorman, my latest book, I should say, has a lot of affinity, I think, to Shadow Country, which was his most recent National Book Award.
When I was younger, I read one of his books called At Play in the Fields of the Lord. That's a very interesting title. Did you two ever talk about his books?
Yes. Actually, I was actually in high school when that came out, and I wrote my term paper for my English class on that book. It's interesting because my first novel actually is called As It Is on Earth. So At Play in the Fields of the Lord and As It Is on Earth probably have a little bit of relationship that I hadn't thought about before you mentioned it, but we both are drawing on, I think, our high Episcopalian background.
Well, it's a catchy title, and I can't think of anything better than trying to be at play in the fields of the Lord, because this place is kind of unusual when you're trying to live on planet Earth. But again, we're speaking to Peter Wheelwright, the author of The Doorman, and let's get right into that. It has to do with the Gilboa Dam and the creation of the dam, but it's fact and fiction combined. Explain that.
Years ago, I read an article in the local Columbia County newspaper. I think it's called the Rojan Independent. And Robert Titus, you're a local fellow in this area, had written about the building of the Gilboa Dam in the Schoharie Valley and this amazing discovery of fossils in the quarries that were supplying the zone for the dam. And I read on, and he talked about this woman who actually came down from the State Museum in Albany named Winifred Goldring, who was a patronized woman in a man's field.
Sure.
Paleontology was very much about men. But she came down, was a very strong-willed woman and made a kind of brilliant identification of the fossils and that stood the test of time for a number of years and went on to have a great career thereafter because of this. But it was the convergence of events that not all of which Bob had written about in his article. He focused on the fossil discovery. But it was the reason the dam was being built was because the New York City water supply system, the Board of Water Supply in New York, needed more water. And they impounded through eminent domain that valley for the creation of the reservoir. And the poor town of Gilboa was, going to be flooded, abandoned and flooded. And then they made this discovery of the fossil, and there was a moment there where hope was being held out that perhaps the town would be saved. The town folks, and this was an upstate rural town, it wasn't a terribly sophisticated place, they didn't fully understand why they were being ousted from their valley. They didn't understand the technological and political power of New York City, the one hand, nor did they really understand the extraordinary nature of the scientific discovery of these fossils, other than maybe it would save their town. So it was this funny convergence of events, women in science, downstate, upstate, deep time, contemporary time, that all of these ideas kind of catalyzed for me and inspired the writing of the book.
Very nice. Now, I understand a lot about old fossils because I have to work with one here, Jay Fink. And now, what years are we talking about? And then explain the significance of the fossils. What were they about?
Well, they started building the dam. I think they got final approval to build the dam in, I think it was 1914 or 1915, and it was underway in 1916. It was already beginning to be formed up. And it was in 1917 that the Riverside Quarry, the fossils were exposed. The men, the Italian stonecutters who first saw them in the quarry, were very confused by them and thought actually they were elephants' feet.
Whoa.
But what they turned out to be were the trunks, the remnants of the trunks of basically a Devonian period forest.
Wow.
And that goes back now 350, 400 million years prior. And what was so amazing about it was the extent of it, because they found many, many casts of these stumps that had been basically flooded by the Catskill Sea and then come back to the surface and then flooded again over great periods of time. But the significance of it was believed to be at that time the oldest remnants of an ancient botanical forest in the world. And it was right at that period. The Devonian period is very important for human beings because it's the beginning of a truly oxygenated atmosphere because of all the trees, and that paved the way for our lungs and our capacity to breathe out of water. It was the transition from being lungfish to human beings. It was a very significant story for humankind.
And that's a real life story. And
yes,
these fossils are still in existence. You've seen them?
Yeah, the original town of Gilboa, of course, is its foundations are under the water of the Schoharie Reservoir. But the town, the new town of Gilboa, which was sort of reestablished on higher ground, they have a museum and they have a collection of these fossils, as well as a lot of the real-life backstory of some of the characters of that period. And they have a display along the road, just alongside of the Schoharie Reservoir, that anybody can see. I can't remember the name of the route, but somebody probably in the Golden Age audience will know.
Sure.
But it's there. You can't miss it. You drive right by it. And there they are. They look like elephants' feet along the road.
We are speaking to Peter Wheelwright, who will be discussing his new book, The Doorman, which we haven't even really gotten into yet because all the other stuff you're talking about is so interesting. The Doorman, and now these fossils were real. Winifred Goldring was real. The Doorman is kind of your imagination. How did they come together?
One of the things I'm interested in my writing is the idea of how we as individuals think of ourselves as having a self, as having our own autonomous personhood. And in truth, we are all actually products of historical events. As they say in the academic world, we're acculturated. We have a kind of a family ancestry. We have a cultural ancestry. And we have a species ancestry. So we really are kind of products of events, places, and people through time. And in that sense, we're in a way kind of absolved for who we are because we had no control over our history and those events in history and so forth that shape us to who we are today. So that idea has been of great interest to me in all my writing and all my books. And in this particular case, because, and this may have a little to do also with the fact that I'm an architect who has spent a lot of time living in New York City and is very aware of Central Park and the famous Central Park Reservoir, the Jackie Onassis Reservoir. So that connection of the New York City water system, which I know very well as an architect and someone who studies urban issues, I knew that very well. I knew this reservoir very well. The Catskill water system, I came to know quite well. So I wanted to bring those events of the Gilboa Dam forward in time to the subsequent generation. So one could see how that event in Gilboa impacted another pair of worlds in later times. So the book takes place over three generations, and it's narrated by the member of the third generation, who is the doorman. And I chose the doorman because I wanted somebody near the Central Park Reservoir. So this is a doorman who was able to watch the Central Park Reservoir and also knows where that water is coming from, had been coming from, and so on. So it begins, actually, the doorman begins at the time that the Central Park Reservoir, the Jackie Onassis Reservoir, is being decommissioned in 1993. And so the third generation is 1993, and then it goes back to the second generation, which is 1930s and 40s, and then to the Gilboa generation and Winifred Goldring. And it's basically how that big event in the Schoharie Valley created the circumstances for a whole other set of descendants of Winifred Goldrings. Now, that's where the fiction comes in, because, in fact, Winifred Goldring did not have any children. But in my book, she does. And not to give too much of a spoiler, it's a child out of wedlock. I just hope that wasn't too long-winded a response to your question.
No, sir, it's just fine. Because it's very interesting the way the nonfiction and the fiction overlap, and you've created, like, all I can think of is Tolkien, J.R. Tolkien, when you look at his books. He created a whole world and then, you know, made it seem like real creatures. And it sounds like you're doing the same thing. The doorman's there, and this is all imagining his relatives up here in the Gilboa Prattsville area.
That's also one of the things I'm interested in my books is real historical events, real historical people, real historical places, and then imagining the kind of interior, unspoken lives of these events and people and places. So that's kind of a common thread in all of my writing. One thing I meant to mention in response to your question about the doorman, and because I know implied by the question too, was why a doorman telling this story? And the reason, I think I may have mentioned this to you before, the doorman was important because of where he was situated near the Central Park Reservoir, but also because a doorman is the sort of penultimate example of somebody who can be both invisible to everyone while also knowing everything about everyone. Doorman, they open the door, and it's almost as if they don't have a life. They're kind of invisible to the people who they serve, the buildings that they serve. Yet, of course, they do have a life, and they have a very rich life, and they have, you know, families and blah, blah, blah. You learn early in the book that this is a doorman who has an extraordinary life, and that he is basically chosen to be a doorman in order to be invisible while paying attention to what's going on in the building he's working at. And that becomes a big part of the story. So he's there with a purpose that no one can see but him.
We're speaking with Peter Wheelwright, the author of The Doorman. How does that add or subtract from just the straight historic accounting of it? Like, I guess a lot of those people wouldn't be alive, but what does it add, in your opinion, as a writer, a novelist?
I think in a funny way, it puts, for better or worse, flesh on the historical bones of events and places and people that we know. It's always tricky using real names, and the book is full of the real names of some real people involved in these different episodes. And I worried a little bit about using Winifred Goldring's real name in the book because I'm playing fancifully with her interior life.
We're on the wire with Peter Wheelwright. And the last subject that you mentioned when I interviewed you for my story for the newspaper, you're going to have slides of before, during, and after the construction. And you mentioned some things about what they had to do with moving cemeteries and stuff. Fill us in on that.
It's not an uncommon story what happened to Gilboa. It happened in many places, not just elsewhere in New York State for the New York City water supply system, which has three branches of water supply. There's the Croton system, the Catskill system, which is what I was writing about, and the Delaware system. And all of those had a number of towns that were lost or submerged by these reservoirs. But it's a common story across the world. Wherever reservoirs are needed, there's many, many times you'll have a town that's, quote, in the way and has to be abandoned. So when a town is being taken over by eminent domain, like Gilboa was, you got to figure out what to do, how to pack up and get out of there. And a lot of things they had to do. They had to dig up all the cemeteries and rebury them further above what's called the taking line, which is the top of the water, you know, reservoir. They move everything up there. There's also the kind of the pathos of having your town become a ghost town and then being submerged underwater. It's a very surreal, uncanny, horrifying sort of thought for anybody who had lived there. So then you have to burn the town down so at least fish aren't swimming through your bedroom windows.
Right.
You know, they had to dig up all these septic outhouses.
Wow.
And it's a big project. And And some people, if they could afford it, had their houses lifted off the foundation and put on capstans, rolling capstans. And they have these oxen teams basically slowly hauling the houses off of their foundation and up to higher ground and placed down on other foundations. So it's a real undertaking. And all that has to be going on while these massive walls of concrete are going up at the end of this creek that you've been fishing out of for 10 generations or whatever. It's a pretty surreal, as you can imagine, thing to experience if you're a member of the town.
It sounds like it's a very fascinating book. We're on the wire again with Peter Wheelwright, an award-winning author. In fact, his book, The Doorman, which he will be speaking to the Golden Agers Club about on April 15th at 1 p.m., the public is invited, was called one of the best books of 2022 by The New Yorker. And previously, his book, As It Is on Earth, was the Penn Hemingway Honorable Mention for Literary Excellence in Debut Fiction. So the man knows what he's doing. This should be a very interesting discussion. Again, April 15th, 1 p.m., the public is invited along with the Golden Agers, and there's a luncheon. My understanding is people like when there's food at the end of this. What the Golden Agers meet for our listeners, and for you, I'm sure you'll find it, but it's at the west end of South Street in the ambulance center, the new ambulance center in the town of Wyndham. So it's easy to get to. There's plenty of places to park. And I think this is going to be one of the more fascinating discussions because Prattsville was also considered, and they lucked out in the long run. And it ended up being poor Gilboa getting flooded.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Mr. Wheelwright, you've gotten my interest. We appreciate you joining us. We look forward to hearing your discussion about your book. Keep at it. You seem to be fairly fond of writing.
I am. Thank you very much. I look forward to coming over there.